The first reading this morning comes from an article on this last week's Christian Century, a progressive Christian biweekly that most Unitarian Universalist ministers I know subscribe to because of the quality of both the reporting and the poetry. The reporter, Lindsay Ellis, in this case, is herself a minister.
A 90-year-old man and two clergy received citations on November 2nd after Fort Lauderdale, Florida became the latest city to place restrictions on feeding the homeless. Arnold Abbott, who founded Love Thy Neighbor in 1991, has been providing food to homeless people at a local beach for more than 20 years. After I was cited, I took everybody over to a church parking lot. We did feed everybody. It wasn't a complete waste. Abbott, who has been ordered to appear in court, faces a maximum of 60 days in jail. Ray Sternberg joined the First Baptist Church in Fort Lauderdale in 1994 and recalls a Thanksgiving dinner held annually on a blocked-off area on the boulevard where the church is located. Carloads of volunteers would serve hundreds of homeless people each year, he said. You have so many people here, homeless people here in Fort Lauderdale, and the need is great, he said. More than 30 U.S. cities have restricted or are in the process of restricting the sharing of food with the homeless, according to a report from the National Coalition for the Homeless. The report, called Share No More, The Criminalization of Efforts to Feed People in Need, aims to dispel what the authors call a widespread myth that food sharing perpetuates homelessness. In many cases, food sharing programs might be the only occasion in which some homeless individuals have access to healthy, safe food, the report reads.
And the second reading for this Thanksgiving celebration comes from the pen of the New Zealand theologian Lloyd Gearing, who was, and I'm not making this up, tried as a heretic in the Presbyterian Church of New Zealand back in 1967 for speaking of his understanding of a new Christian faith without either a personal God or a literally resuscitated Jesus. The trial ended in no decision after a great deal of back and forth. He has written many remarkable books and is much appreciated and honored in progressive Christian circles.
In 1972, the Club of Rome, an internationally assembly of business leaders, published The Limits to Growth. This computer-based report concluded that the world order would collapse if population growth, industrial expansion, increased pollution, and the depletion of natural resources were to continue at current rates. The Club of Rome called for a Copernican revolution of the mind, which abandoned the commitment to endless economic growth and a shift from consumerism to a more service-based economy. The recommendations of the Club of Rome were heavily criticized by business interests who had the most to lose, but their claims served only to illustrate how much political and economic ideology is driven by self-interest. Also, the fast increasing population upsets the ecological balance between the various species and our source of sustenance. Humans, in order to live, are interfering with the food chains which have evolved over time, depriving both ourselves and other species of sustenance. All food for human consumption comes from four biological systems: croplands, grasslands, forests, and fisheries. Each of these is being seriously depleted. Because of the clearing of pasture and forest lands for agriculture, vast amounts of topsoil are being swept down into the ocean and lost for the future. the United States alone loses 4 to 6 billion tons of topsoil each year.
Well, Thanksgiving is indeed coming. And Thanksgiving is the only holiday of the year in the United States which focuses quite so completely on the idea of a common meal, on food. Of course, most of us eat meals every day, not just on this one Thursday in November. And so I guess that's where I'll begin. You know, it was a very different world back in the 1950s when I was growing up. Today, when people talk about China, they talk about a superpower in the world. They talk about economic clout and how the Chinese literally own large parts of our own United States economy. They talk about the large, sparkling cities with great skylines and super-fast trains that float on magnetic cushions. They even, to be honest, also point out the vast environmental offenses. But back when Eisenhower was president, China meant something entirely else. If, during nightly supper, I didn't finish the food on my plate because I did not like it, whether it was the dreaded dandelion leaf salad or the liver and the onions, I was given the lecture, and please capitalize the L in that word. Don't you know how grateful you should be to have any food at all? The people in China are all starving right now for lack of food, and there you are complaining about a salad. You will sit there, young man, until you finish your supper. My brother, the most stubborn of us all, would sometimes just sit there till 9 o'clock in the evening, arms crossed, refusing to eat. My sister and I usually caved. Later, when I was up in Rochester in college and first went to a Chinese restaurant, I was actually a bit surprised that the Chinese had developed such a complex, delicious cuisine because they had been starving all this time. Now, from that beginning, let me leap over and focus more tightly on the holiday meal. Many people associate Thanksgiving with a special menu, and some seem to assume, at least that's what they tell me, that it's a relatively common menu all across the country. Well, it's not. On Thanksgiving, at my house, as a kid, we only had Italian food, and only Northern Italian food. None of this New World nonsense with mashed potatoes and candied sweet potatoes. We had stuffed artichokes, both homemade ravioli and homemade sausage, and for dessert, we had a special layered trifle that my grandmothers both used to make called zuppa inglese, with enough rum and brandy in it to make all of us children a bit tipsy without actually us knowing what was going on. And of course, we ate everything on our plate lest we got the lecture about China. Well, things are very different for me now. Maybe that's true for some of you. My blood family, except for my sister, is gone now. She lives far away. And as usual this Thanksgiving, I am cooking for a whole group of friends, my new family, including my adopted son. But there is no easy universal menu at my table. Around my table will be many people who can or will only eat certain foodstuffs and not others. Some, for example, are allergic to cow's milk, but interestingly, not to goat's milk or sheep's milk. Some go into shock if I fold in a single walnut to any dish. Some cannot have sweet potatoes because they are, well, sweet. Others cannot have any kind of wheat flour, or they can have no gluten in anything. Some are on a paleo diet, which is a new word that means they prefer to eat only meat and a few choice greens, no grains or grasses whatsoever, including the fashionable quinoa. Some choose not to eat any turkey because it is meat. Others who hated spinach when they were kids still hate spinach and are not really sure if anything called a vegetable can be good, especially if it's green. Some will drink only water at my table. Others will drink wine. And yet, I promise you, we're all going to have a great time. We always do. We won't argue about anything because arguing is just plain silly anyway. And we're not going to offer lectures to each other about anything, about what we eat or don't eat. We will talk about many things, however. We will talk about our lives, our loves, our losses. And we'll probably, as usual, we'll talk about the latest news. News especially, perhaps, having to do with the food we are going to be eating. For example, Mother Earth News reported recently that very convincing new studies reveal that the increasing gluten intolerance we hear about today is probably due entirely to the use of Monsanto pesticides like Roundup on all of our crops. This chemical technology is apparently actually changing our physical bodies. We may also spend some time talking about how alcohol has changed permanently the chemical compositions of the brains of some of our alcoholic relatives, even as some of us are lifting a glass of unoaked Chardonnay as we have that conversation, or eating my palate version of my grandmother's zuppa inglese. We'll talk about how margarine used to be virtuous and butter a crime, but about how recent studies suggest that the exact reverse is true. We'll discuss the social ethic of vegetarianism or veganism, or we'll talk about the remarkable improvements to personal health a strict adherence to the paleo diet has made in other people's lives. And some of us will talk about how they worked in a food kitchen before showing up at my place, serving the homeless a taste of the food this meal-centered holiday proclaims. Of course, that last thing seems to be a bit harder to do nowadays, according to the reports I've been reading all week in the Christian Science Monitor or in the Christian Century. I offered you a snippet from the latter this morning about the law in Fort Lauderdale diminishing the capacity of kind folks to feed the hungry, as they had been doing for the last 20 years with no problem until now. Oh, I know. Someone's going to tell me there must be some good reason for doing it, right? The mayor is sure, for example, that feeding the hungry is promoting homelessness somehow. Huh. As if that had been the goal, the life goal of the hungry from the very beginning. Graduate from high school, get a job, lose it, and finally, at last, glory be, become homeless and poor and hungry. What a bunch of blather. Certainly, the real reason for this is that it's just plain embarrassing. Out of sight, out of mind, is another proverb I heard all the time when I was a kid. After all, this is the best country in the world, and this can't be happening here. Poor people live in India or in China, not around here. And I heard that all the time when I was growing up. The United States was it. The United States was the best. The United States was the top of the line, the land of opportunity. Anyone can do anything if they want to put their mind to it. I was told, and this is true, that we were poor when I was young, barely scraping by. And now look at us, a nice small bungalow of brick on the east side of Detroit on Spring Garden Avenue, and food on the table every single day. Yet for some reason, and maybe that's the reason I'm here right now behind this pulpit, I must have been some kind of a budding theologian. Because when I was told, as I was all the time, that I was the luckiest person on earth because I should be thankful to live here instead of China or Mexico or India, I kept on asking on the inside, why was I born here and not in China or not in India? Did God assign me to this geography for a reason? What kind of a God, I asked myself, of course never aloud, what kind of a God would make things so unfair from the very beginning? I was told, beautifully so, that God is love and that God is good, but I couldn't understand how it was good that anyone my age, who looked just like me, except maybe for different colored eyes or different colored hair or different shaped eyes, should live without food on the table every day, whereas I had some. Didn't seem right. And I'm 65 now and not 8 anymore, but I haven't really changed my theology much and the questions that I ask. I don't ask that question of Almighty God now. But I ask it instead about human beings who live in this country and in the rest of the so-called first world. As you heard from the reading in Lloyd Gehring's book back in the early 1970s, a group of business leaders who called themselves the Club of Rome suggested that the commitment, and that's their word, the commitment of first world leadership to unregulated economic growth was part of a problem, a serious problem, which could actually bring civilization as we know it to a complete halt in time, namely our century, our present century. Larger and larger economies all the time, based on larger and larger technological advances in food production, without regard to the destruction of ecosystems, is indeed a problem. The Club of Rome writes that arch-New Zealand heretic Loy Gearing, called for a Copernican revolution of the mind which abandons the commitment to endless economic growth and asks for a shift from consumerism to a more service-based economy. The Club of Rome, although consisting of business leaders, was soundly condemned as heretical by other business leaders less visionary. And I'm not just using the word heretical here because I'm preaching about heresy during the month of November, using that as a basic theme. I'm talking not about metaphor, but about the real word heresy and heretic. You don't have to be religious, after all, to be a heretic. It's the language they use to soundly condemn these visionaries. Those of you who are computer literate and like to do things like this, when you go home, put in the word Club of Rome into your search engine and then count how many hundreds of times the word heretic or heresy was used back in the 70s to criticize this particular group of people and their theories. You will be amazed, I promise you. It sounds like John Calvin shouting at the Pope during the Reformation. It doesn't sound like 1972. And their predictions are all coming true, one day at a time. For the sake of great profit for some and no profit for others, the way food for our tables is being produced by agribusiness literally strips the soil off our land. 6 billion tons annually. In a while, it won't even be a land. And every day you will find that the assertions, the prophecies, if you want to use a religious concept from the Hebrew Scriptures, every day you will find the prophecies of the Club of Rome are slowly but surely being recognized as visionary and as truthful. By who? By the progressively religious, by the environmentalists, and by many, many Nobel economists. But watch it. Watch it close. If you yourself express your concern for the environmental impact of the economic growth creed, or if you bring up the hungry in our country by feeding them visibly on the street, or if you suggest that a human-centered economy for all, a service economy that builds communities, promotes equality and equal access to the table, including the one where the food is, the big guns will come out in force. You're talking socialism here. You are a communist, and communism failed, you fool. Socialism, communism, two punch-in-the-nose words that lecture me. Case closed, shut up. Perpetual economic growth is good, criticism is bad. Billions for some, minimum wage for others, that's realism, folks. So what if your bodies are changing and you can no longer eat bread without getting sick? So what if the ecosystem is distorted? You're eating, aren't you? So it has a little radiation in it. Complainer, what are you? Are you against capitalism? Heresy, heresy. Un-American, you're making Jefferson turn in his grave. And don't you know China is doing the same thing as we are, polluting, giving up their socialist ideals for unbridled capitalism? You got to get with the plan, man. They are not starving anymore like your mother told you. They are winning. And obviously, we have to destroy the world before they do. It's a matter of pride. It's a matter of patriotism. But me, little old heretic me, I happen to think the Club of Rome said something very important. A Copernican revolution of the mind. And of the heart, I might add. I like the sound of it. In fact, I may bring it up at Thanksgiving dinner when we are talking about the world and all the things food symbolizes for us. So yes, some people are going to eat Chinese for Thanksgiving, with chopsticks too. Some, like me and my family, are going to eat Italian, Northern Italian. Others are going to eat New World foods like corn and squash. Others will eat donated food on the streets in Fort Lauderdale, just as the guy who is feeding them gets thrown into jail for his effrontery. Someone, maybe in a story, will eat a giant Thanksgiving donut his Aunt Imelda baked for dessert. And some will focus on the donut itself, I suppose, and some will focus on the meaning of the hole in the center. But as the older guy said to the two friends in that crowded park, the best way to look at the donut or the world we are living on is to share it.